At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horses. Why you should join us in Pennsylvania.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night. Action in thrill horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Freezing Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Beck.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, second half on this Friday, a kind of a wet, drizzly, well, I take that back. It's not drizzly. It's thunderstormy. That's me just trying to put a happy spin on everything, right? Bill, hold on. Let me see. Come forward for a second. There we go. Try that again. Bill Gallo.
Yep.
Bill Gallo and Woodbury Payne.
Good morning, Steve.
The man with four names, five names.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Bill, I got an introduction to the event. I've certainly had years of hints about the Iroquois and about what to expect, and it's already exceeding expectations. I mean, it's... This is quite something. Why have you been keeping this a secret?
It's a special event. It really is. I'm so glad that you could make it here for the first time. I know Sean's been torturing you about it, but I'm sure you're going to go away with even a better feeling once we get the races underway. Great venue, great card, top purses. It's our spring championship day. There's no question about it.
There's so many parts that you realize as you go around to these. This is, I guess, this would be the fourth different. I went to your place,
Montpelier,
and obviously Far Hills, and trying to this. I think there's one other that I'm trying to remember that I may have gone down to Little Washington? Down to
Middleburg?
No, I can't remember anymore. It was in the early 80s.
Might have been the Virginia Gold Cup.
Yeah.
Rappahannock Point is right beside Little Washington. So you might have been there for that.
We were drunk. we were all. It was in the fall. That I'll tell you. My one of our baseball league friends, his brother, Skip Moser. His brother is a caterer and had a beautiful catering spread out. It was a lot of fun. So this is when people said that. Oh, it's as good or better than Far Hills. I was like, how can that be? And I think I'm finding out.
They're similar. The best similarity is that, as I said earlier, this is championship day for the spring. Far Hills is championship day for the fall. And the venues are somewhat similar. You can basically see the entire racetrack, which is wonderful.
It had the similarity of the natural bowl of the ellipse, the big ellipse that kind of overlooks the course. It is grandiose, as Sean Clancy described it yesterday, the Belmont essentially of steeplechase. I'm going to tell you, this needs to be made more clear. I think to Eclipse voters, for instance, what this is and how significant this is, because it hasn't been, I don't think it's been delineated properly. Maybe because it's so early in the scheme of things,
right.
Overall, it's the end of the, approaching the end of the first third of the schedule. I mean, if we think of the steeplechase season as trimesters.
Correct.
Right, with the summer on the flat tracks and then the fall, swinging back from Belmont and Far Hills and then the other, the other fall hunt meets. This is not getting the gravitas that it deserves, I think, in voters' minds. I mean, obviously, if a horse wins, two or three of the grade ones or all four, it becomes, apparent. They're an acclamation champion, but this is obviously more on a par than I realized.
Yeah, I think if you think about the Eclipse, it kind of works backwards anyway. The ultimate goal is to win at Far Hills because it's the biggest purse, and as I said, it's championship day of the fall. And that weighs heavily, clearly, on voters' minds, I know. But you make a good point. Because this race, even though it's significant, it's early in the year. It's quite difficult to have a horse actually participate throughout the year. We've only got five grade ones. Three of them are New York. So it takes a toll. And the other issue, I think you talked about, Sean, about this yesterday, too. This race is very unique because it's in the spring, and it's our longest hurdle race of the year, which sort of doesn't make sense, but the tradition of it stands. And that uniqueness itself, it takes quite a horse to win this race. And you're right, it probably should merit better consideration.
Well, doing what we're doing these 2 days and with the recapping Monday, I'm sure we will drive the point home. And the other part of it is that much like the Far Hills card, with the Gladstone and the other PPAC and the other supporting races, they are also important jumping off points. You talk about this all the time. And in fact, last night we were discussing the ratings system and the potential for it to leak into thoroughbred flat racing, and there's a lot of potential there. The allowance race, these maiden races. I mean, it's as everybody likes to break maidens, and everybody likes to win their races. But winning here is obviously, has more oomph.
Absolutely, we overfilled the maiden special here, and we split it. We came up with enough money to split it, which was great because there's a huge emphasis. The horse that wins the maiden race, I believe it was Proven Innocent last year. He broke his maiden here. He went on to be the novice champion. But if you look back historically, you can the winner of this maiden race, or in this case tomorrow, these two maiden races, will stand out.
The opportunity here also for some locals, because I get the sense we had a lovely dinner last night, and it the social scene and the fundraising that we talk about with Guy Torsolieri and at Far Hills, and talked about yesterday here with Dwight, the Children's Hospital. I mean, $11 million that they've, that they've raised. It's not just something for, Nashville to do. It's tonight's festivities and the racing tomorrow and the evening. It's the social soiree, essentially, of a very significant. Southern community. This is a mammoth big deal.
No question about it, and that's really the beauty of what we do. I mean, what National Steeplechase Association does. We've had 28 of these meets up and down the East Coast, basically, and they're all for charity, and they're all very important social events in that time, in that particular town, on that particular day. Some have a spring and fall meet, but predominantly most are either spring or fall. And when you can have that much impact on a community and you can raise that much money for charity, it's a win-win. The horse part is, you'll see it tomorrow. It's almost secondary here because the people are having a wonderful time, and it's a beautiful day out, and they wait all year for it, and it's a celebration. And it just happens to be that horses are running around, and really good ones are running around. I wish we had parimutuel wagering, because they do some handle here.
Well, I was going to say that's the one part of this that is a maddening aspect. And frankly, for the people who, and you can talk about the gaming, the game that you've created for this year that's having a great reception, but. One thing that holds, I'll say, us back when it comes to the chasing schedule is the inconsistency of the opportunity to wager. I think if it was consistent and went, from April, right straight through to October, it could maybe have more momentum.
Thus another reason why the Iroquois has been de-emphasized, because you can bet on all the other grade ones. And I think that's a very, very important factor in this.
There will be, I take it there's the bookmakers that'll be out there. The people making book on the hill
No.
They used to be at Far Hills? No?
No. I don't think so.
No?
You'd have to ask one of the locals about that, but I'd say no. What we do have,
there might be some pools. Are there anybody taking bets on the hill?
It's not
here.
Yeah.
Privately in the boxes, they cut up the program and draw out of a hat.
Oh, they do like a pool, like a
but,
just a fun
hat pool.
A number of years ago, the state troopers said, I don't care if it's the governor himself, we'll arrest anybody who's caught gambling. So,
well, they're around here, they're going to start arresting people for reading and taking books out of the library.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I had to get that in. this is Marianne, by the way, because of course in Jersey we had that, but now we're betting in Jersey.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, the state of Tennessee banned drinking and betting in 1905 or 1906, and all the thoroughbred industry moved to Kentucky. And that was the end of racing in Tennessee.
Well, people have heard me refer to the blackout for many years, and that happened at the end of the aughts. And the only two venues, the only two jurisdictions in the country that kept racing and doing any kind of betting, that's kind of before parimutuel, but the Maryland and Kentucky. And I started the show actually by saying how Tennessee at one time was on a par with any breeding region in the country.
Right. The geological underpinning of Tennessee is limestone, which provides the calcium in the bluegrass. And Tennessee is even richer than Kentucky is, but because they've taken the benefit, the financial benefit out of horse racing from Tennessee, it all moved to Kentucky.
Yeah. Interesting. It's W.H.P. Robertson's History of Thoroughbred Racing in America tells the whole story, and I mean, you got the walking horses.
You saw some of the scales of operation just driving to the restaurant last night. These tremendous barns and farms that don't exist now, unfortunately.
The standardbred as well. Standardbred community that, Tennessee was a big deal on that front. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. Bill, a couple of thoughts also I brought up with Dwight, and part of it came out of the visit we had, a delightful visit with Patrick Lewis from Upland Flats, who has become a major player, essentially, 30 horses that he's partnered in. But when you look at the, let's talk about the card a little bit. Let me reach for my copy of it. There it is right there. I put it. We're seeing more and more names, Bill, from the flat community. And, I don't want to say it started necessarily with the Ramseys, but, the Ramseys were a name that I thought made the transition. There's people like George Strawbridge, who's crossed over for a long time, but Sal Kumin. And the Matiket team, I saw that Jordan Wyckoff and his folks have gotten involved as well. There's how many inquiries are you fielding on this front? I'm guessing you're seeing more and more thoroughbred owners take an interest on this side.
For sure, it's really a matter of the trainers reaching out to those individual stables. And certainly in the case of the Wyckoffs, they got interested in Saratoga last summer, believe it or not. And they went all in, which was great. Jordan's very enthusiastic. His dad, Kirk, supports it as well through Three Diamonds. But it's great to get those new people in. They're not new people. I mean, it's great to get those flat people in. And Patrick expressed it beautifully yesterday. His enthusiasm was a great interview, even I know it was impromptu, but he covered a lot of bases. But one thing that was undeniable is his enthusiasm and his willingness to take a risk on both sides. Flat horses, obviously, is the major force, and he's had great success in a very short period of time. But he doesn't disregard the jumping game, and he sees some value in it, and he's a businessman, and I hope that we get more and more involvement that way.
Is there an active, I don't know why I haven't ever looked at this. Is there on the website a how to get involved kind of a...
There are some fundamental things, but, once again, it really falls in the lap of the trainers. Go out and get some new clients, and what better way to find a client than go to a racetrack and maybe entice them into the game. Saratoga is a wonderful place, for that, for obvious reasons. And plus, they're in New York. There's such a great history of steeplechase racing. We're sort of well thought of on the backside at Saratoga, in particular Saratoga and Belmont, because there's so much familiarity with people like Barkley Tagg, and so many of the people that came from the steeplechase game, the Skiffingtons, the O'Briens, things like that. So there's much more of an acknowledgement of what we are. They clearly understand that we are thoroughbred horses that jump fences. So I think we're making strides for sure. There's nothing like having success, which fuels your enthusiasm. I think that's an important factor too. This also, let's not mince words here. Purses matter, and it's very important. I think Patrick even touched upon it yesterday. It's not as much money in steeplechase racing, but there is money, and you can justify your investment. And, we're always hoping that our race meets, push those purses forward. We're probably going to have a record year total purses this year, which is an amazing rebound from where we were in COVID year.
And we've talked about that the last couple of summers as the pendulum has swung back. What, out of curiosity, what would, maybe you might be a good answer for this. What's day rate on a steeplechase horse for the most part?
75.
So it's a little bit less.
A little bit less.
It's about 20. It's about 25% less than.
And that's a guesstimate, and that's probably either too low, or in some cases maybe too high, but it's somewhere in that vicinity.
All right, so
less than 100, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because on the racetrack right now, I mean, 100 is a minimum on the big circuits. Mm-hmm. On the smaller circuits, it's less. But for the type of owners that are involved, that's still a fairly reasonable, you know, day rate to handle.
Yeah. And in Virginia, we're well aware of the contribution of steeplechase racing. And the BEA has kindly contributed $150,000 to each hunt meet in Virginia to help supplement purses this year. And, of course, at Colonial, we've got a full program throughout the summer. We're now part of the Parimutuel program. The purse structure is a little bit better there than at the hunt meets, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
And it gives a jumping off point and
so to speak,
good introduction, and actually helps feed some horses towards Saratoga as well.
Yeah, because Bill, we've talked about this, and you know, when the visit we'll make to Colonial this summer again, you know, the two races at the beginning. Right at the beginning of the week, that schedule, has that changed?
It has changed, and we're going to have the first two races with inside the regular program, which is great, Parimutuel wagering. So the first two races every Friday.
For
9 consecutive Fridays, which is terrific. So we're racing the first race at Saratoga every Wednesday, and then the first two races at Colonial every Friday.
Excellent.
So it's a big program, and they complement each other. We run concurrently. We don't conflict. Saratoga gets the premier horses. We've got the 3 grade ones in New York, 2 in Saratoga, and 1 at Belmont or Aqueduct. But that's an important part. We have Straight Never 1-2 there, so those maiden winners, the 2 maiden winners from here will probably advance to Saratoga and Straight Never 1-2. At Colonial, we have several maiden races at Colonial, basically a maiden race each week, sometimes for fillies, but mainly for males. They're $40,000 purse, good solid purse for a maiden special. And we have these ratings races consistently at Saratoga every week. And that's a whole other topic, but it's basically our ratings from 115 down, which is our claiming division of horses, without risking your horse to be claimed. So it's worked out very nicely over the last couple of years, and I would expect with the expanded program at Colonial, our normal program at Saratoga, we're going to have a heck of a summer.
Nice.
Well, and you've developed a very nice Philly Steak program at Colonial.
Yeah, good point. We had one Philly Steak for $100,000, the Randy Rouse, for the last couple of years, and we asked if we could kind of split that in half and offer two 75s, and Colonial was good enough to say yes to that. And that's going to be wonderful. They're separated by a month, so we're going to have the final one, I believe, is the Life's Illusion on the closing Friday for us.
Well, and how does it fit into the Mrs. Phipps?
We're not running the Philly races in New York, and we had a good run for 3 or 4 years, and then we had a Philly shortage, quite frankly, and it's been challenging to, you know, refuel that. The move we just made at Colonial, I think, is going to help refuel that. Those two $75,000 races. And then there's a big Philly race in the fall. Typically, it's at Far Hills. And last year, Montpelier picked up the slack because Far Hills didn't want to have it. But we're going to have a good Philly stake in the fall. So I think between Colonial and Montpelier and or Far Hills, I think we can rejuvenate that Philly division, which is important.
Nice. Well, a couple of thoughts to a couple of more minutes. Bill Gallo with us from NSA, National Steeplechase. And, of course, you can follow Go Jump Racing on Twitter, the official feed. There's also Jumping with USA, Jumping with.
It's one of those Twitter.
There's a couple,
yeah.
The The feature. Well, can anybody beat Snap Decision?
No. Do we have a
rider yet? What is Jack doing? What is Jack Fisher doing about replacing Graham Waters?
He hasn't indicated. I asked him last night, and he said he would let me know today. It's a big decision, obviously, but it's I wasn't being facetious or direct, but he's going to be tough to beat. I think he's in really good form right now. Obviously, it's weight for age. I'm a handicapper, so if weight means anything, this is the time when it's going to mean the most. Particularly in these conditions. It's going to be very trying conditions tomorrow with this rain.
How soft do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be soft. I think it may not be that soft to walk. I think it's going to be real soft to, you know, race over, which is going to favor some, and it's, you know, it's going to trouble some others. But clearly you got to look at Willie Mullins' horse, though.
I was going to say, that's got to give, gives...
I'd almost look
a little
at...
a bit of an edge?
I'd also look at Mortlock, who is fairly high in the odds. I made him 15-1, thinking the ground would be either good to firm, and with softer turf, those Europeans, they may relish that. But as far as the others in the race, you know, anything up against Snap Decision right now is at a disadvantage, particularly when they're carrying the same weight.
Speaking of the headliners in the division, we understand that the Mean Queen is back working. There's a chance that the Chief enters the fray somewhere along the line.
I believe they're shooting for Colonial Down Philly Steak.
There it is. Okay. We talked to Sean Clancy extensively yesterday and went through. Sean's got six in. Got a full-fledged assault on this race. You mentioned Willie Mullins. That one thing, Bill, that really, going back to last year and Buick, that has been a bonanza, I think, abroad, correct?
Oh, yeah.
From Ireland and the UK in general. How much publicity that Shark Hanlon got for Buick, and then, of course, bringing him in the pub and everything else. And even you could even tell by the concern there was for him when he fell at Cheltenham.
Absolutely.
In the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
And you could just tell that he was way more widely known because of his win in the U.S.
Yeah.
And I got to think that it means way more, you know, beside Gordon Elliott and, mm-hmm. and Shark and Willie Mullins coming over, I would think that a lot more outfits, you must be getting calls.
Well, I think that's part of it. I agree with you. I think it clearly helped that mission, that message. But the bigger message is the purse itself. When you have 150,000 like we have in Saratoga and Aqueduct or Belmont, there's a significant difference between 150 and the 250 at Far Hills, and that 250,000 really gets their attention. And in fact, I think right here at Iroquois, this race was 150,000 last year. You bump it to 200, and suddenly Willie Mullins pricks his ears, and we've got a horse from Willie Mullins. So I think it has a lot to do with the purse, quite frankly.
No, and the riders, you know, even this winter, the riders who had the winter off that came over the Turfway and other places, right. they said they're here to earn, they're here to make money, and
yeah.
So it's, you know, even what thoroughbred fans look at as seemingly, you know, modest purse levels,
flat fails.
Yeah,
I was just saying, not thoroughbred fans, flat
fans.
Fans,
excuse me. That's what I say. These are thoroughbreds too. Exactly. John Parada says, "Money follow. You know, horses follow money. It's not a tough equation to, you know, to figure out." So, looking out, I see that I think the rain has tailed off. Some other spots, Bill, that some other horses you're excited about and people should be aware of going into tomorrow?
Well, we got three nice stakes. I mean, the card is solid all around, and there's a lot of diversity. But, you know, I wouldn't overlook this novice stake. It's a small field of five, but it's a terrific field. Freddie Flintshire, everybody's been talking about him, and he was very impressive. I would note, too, that he won very easily. He came late with a big rush. I won handily at Charlotte. The ground was on the softer side at Charlotte, and the Charlotte course has some the relevance as far as tomorrow's concerned. It's a similar type course, a little bit undulating, with some hills. I think Freddie Flinchar might just love the ground. He's in against a really good horse, the Hero Next Door, Leslie Young, and he's 2 for 2 and hasn't done anything wrong. And then, of course, Proven Innocent, our novice champion, is in there as well. So those three horses alone make it a terrific race, and the other two certainly have a shot. But, you know, that's even though it's a small field, it's a stellar field. I'm just looking forward. And the Philly Stakes will be interesting for sure. You know, not a lot of accomplished ones here. Breon's got the most accomplished is Molly Fantasy. And, you know, she came from abroad, and she may like the softer going, too. We'll see how that goes. And Leslie Young's got something that looks really nice, this right tempo. He broke his maiden at Middleburg, or she broke her maiden at Middleburg, and she looked really nice doing it. So I'm just looking forward to it. I think I mentioned to you last night that first race is one of these ratings races. It's 11-horse field, and it's about one of the most competitive ratings races we've had in a long time. And the weights are adjusted by the rating of the horse, and you could make a case for literally almost every horse in the race. I was handicapping it when I was doing the morning line. I said, boy, this is a good one. So that little rating system has worked very nicely for us for the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, and there's plenty of horses in that group that horse players will recognize from their careers on the flat, including Go Poke the Bear, the Kitten's Joy 7-year-old that made 40-something starts on the flat. Leslie Young in Leslie's hands, and a first-out winner also over the soft at Charlotte. And so lots to look forward to. Let's, Bill, before we wrap, how everybody can watch the races, of course, because they're streamed, and as well as the fun
Stable Duel
contest.
Yeah, the Stable Duel contest we just started this year. Brianna Mott made a presentation to our board back in January, and we've kicked it off this spring. We've had a lot of fun with it. It's not gambling. It's a fun game. You pick a stable of 10 horses. You just go onto the Stable Duel app. Very simple to do. A lot of fun. You pick 10 horses. You can't exceed a $50,000 payroll cut limit. And each horse has a value based on the morning line odds. So as you pick your horses, it totals it on the bottom, so you know where you are as it relates to 50,000. And it's a lot of fun. I play it myself. I can't win. They're not going to pay me off. But
what are the prizes?
500 to the winner.
Nice.
They paid 25 deep. I think you get $25 for finishing 25th. Which is a fun way to do it. There's anywhere from 700-800 to 1,000 people playing it a week. So it's that fan engagement, which I think is pretty important. I think if they can get the word out here tomorrow, some of the people that are here are going to have a little bit more interest in the racing for the first time. So it's a new opportunity for us, and it's not a form of betting. It's just a form of fun. So we're gonna keep doing that. We're going to do it at Willowdale tomorrow as well, and we've got one final contest at Radnor next Saturday, and then we'll assess things over the summer, and then hopefully make a plan for Stable Duel in the fall.
Excellent. And the watching the stream
right on our website,
nationalsteeplechase.com.
It's a button right there. You can watch both tomorrow. I don't know how we're going to sync them all up, but they're going to be going from Iroquois to Willowdale and vice versa.
Excellent, excellent. And Tony Bentley on the mic.
My man, Tony Bentley. He's been doing it a long time.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Can't thank everybody enough for the urging, starting with Sean Clancy, and then Woodbury took up the mantle to get me here. And I've never seen Tina as excited, not in forever. She gotten a little,
Good for her.
A little after 10 plus years, she's gotten a little tired of some of these big days, but this, she is so excited to come tonight, and thanks so much. Thanks to you and Dwight Hall and everybody. And
I want to thank you for coming and, making such a great impact on horse racing, for one, but particularly for us. you've always included us, and it's greatly appreciated.
I love it. I even before, way before I started to talk on radio about racing, one of the things that always fascinated me about Saratoga, coming to Saratoga, was the steeplechase. I thought I just loved it immediately, and it had an interest. So that I came to it, you know, naturally.
Right.
And then when you fold in, you know, the atmosphere and the variety and the nice guys like us. I was going to say, and the people and the people that are involved. It is a congenial and a gracious atmosphere. I mean, we love the racetrack, you know, for its atmosphere. But this is something totally different. And any, you know, the people that have listened to us and all the different Chase community voices, owners and trainers and the like that we've had on over the years, you have to include it in your trips to, you know, to take in racing. It you'll be charmed instantly. It's just the matter whether it's a big one or a little one. The little ones are just as a big a deal. You mentioned Radnor, and when it comes upstate, when we come up to
Geneseo,
yeah. I mean, it's not across the country, you know, but the Eastern Seaboard, where it's available, and if you can coordinate it with other events, you know, with other, you know, this time of year, obviously Derby. I mean, we're 2.5 hours from Louisville. So, I mean, in fact, you know, for people that can afford the time, how about a Land Rover eventing right. weekend before Derby, Oaks Derby, and then this? I mean, that's as great a triple header as you're going to have in to enjoy equine competition.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Right?
A lot of fun. Yep. Covering all the bases.
Exactly. Bill Gallo, everybody, and... C. Beal Payne.
We'll have to get together next week. Timonium.
That
crab cake or pit beef.
Well, I'm doing pit beef with Grenig. I've introduced it to Grenig. We're gonna introduce it to Cali Francois and anybody that wants me to take them to Pioneer for pit beef. I'm quite happy to do it.
Okay, across the street to Michael's. For...
You know, we're going to have to talk about the Michael's situation because there's some real debate going on. You know,
oh, Papa's is now in the mix.
Yeah, and a little bit of the stable
corner stable.
Corner stable. It gets a little bit of a. It's a competition. It's not a walkover anymore.
But I've been going to the Fairgrounds Inn since I was a kid, so that's like home almost.
All right. I trust Woodbury. He knows his way around. Let's turn, and guys, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Steve.
Bill Gallo and Woodbury Payne, and let's get Scully in here for some picks and his weekend recap. Falling behind a tiny, tiny bit, but we will make up. We'll make up some ground. We've got and Rich Migliori has weighed in. He says Papa's Wood. He's put his vote in for Papa's. Let's let me get Scully, and he said he didn't mind being past 11. So because I do want to get, we'll see if he's looked at anything unusual. I already gave you a push at Prairie Meadows of all places. So I hope I didn't sap the value out of that spot. To be honest, and. Then we'll check in with Hammer and with Dennis Drazen as well this hour. Dennis, of course, as we get ready for Monmouth. And maybe James looked at some Monmouth action. James Scully, good morning.
Steve, how are you doing?
I'm good. Let's get your Derby recap in first.
Yeah, absolutely. I was really... well, you know, I didn't think the pace was going to be like an all-out dogfight like it turned out to be. And, you know, that really set the race up for late runners. And I give Mage all the credit in the world. He put together a huge move on the far turn and carried it through the stretch to win, going away in his fourth career start. And that's all, you know. And so he's got a lot going for him, being so lightly raced in his career debut, only came 99 days before the Derby. A lot of upside. I will say that I thought that two fills. I mean, you can just look at the chart of the race, and you can just see. I mean, even you go through the top like eight finishers, and six of them are like 12th through 18th. So those horses all had the prime setup. I thought Two Fills ran huge for second, only being two lengths back. And I even thought Hit Show ran a pretty good race from the rail for fifth. He was up there within 3.5 lengths of the pace. And, you know, he's a horse that to me still has could have a lot more to offer for Brad Cox moving forward. So those were a couple of runners that I thought really get a lot of credit in my book for running a big race, considering the way the pace set up. My real question with Mage moving forward, Steve, is just his starting gate issues. I don't have any doubt that I think he could, you know, learn to break better, you know, eventually in one of these races. He might just bound out of the starting gate, lead wire to wire. But right now, in his last two starts, he's just not getting out of the gate. And that's a little bit of a concern, you know, moving forward in the Preakness and his, you know, immediately upcoming starts.
Interesting. All right. Well, we will wait and see how the field knits together. The draw is on Monday. And
I know.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much. We're 72 hours away, I mean, from getting going.
I look at the way the Preakness is going to shape up. It looks like we're going to have three horses from the Derby. Obviously, Mage is going to be the probable favorite, but, you know, we're going to see some horses, I think, like First Mission, Arabian Lion, and even maybe National Treasure. I think they're all going to take betting action. They could be your second through your fourth choices in the betting. And he's going to be facing some new runners in a perhaps a different pace scenario, but once again, you know, he's a progressing colt that, you know, at least right now, you know, could be any time going forward. He can continue to improve and get better.
It's going to get interesting because of, you know, particularly of Gustavo Delgado's, you know, very polished resume when it comes to, you know, distance training and stamina building. He wins next Saturday, and it'll make for a. I mean, it always makes for a thrilling Belmont scenario.
The handle numbers are just staggering, Steve. I mean, you look at the whole argument with the Triple Crown, to me, it's all business. I mean, you know, obviously the numbers at the Derby were the numbers of the Derby, 188 million bet on the race, you know, over 270 bet on the whole program. But even last year's Preakness Day program had 14 races, only 13 of them were for thoroughbreds. You only had one race that had more than eight horses. You had seven races that had seven or less horses in it, and a whole bunch of horses paid $6 or less, and that card did $113 million in handle. And whereas the Belmont 3 weeks later, which had a better program, better card, did under $100 million. So when a Triple Crown is on the line, the Belmont Stakes, you know, typically does about $150 million or more on that kind of program. And it means a lot of money to the industry. And to me, that's the whole thing about the Triple Crown. You know, you start moving that date more than 2 weeks away from the Derby of the Preakness. And I think if there's a huge dip in revenue for the Maryland Racing Association, Maryland Jockey Club, for First Bet, whoever, you know, whoever. And that's what they'd be losing if they changed the dates of the Triple Crown. How the heck that card did $113 million last year is all relative to date to me, because that was not a good betting program last year on Preakness Day. I think it'll be a lot better this year because Bob Baffert's coming with horses. But still, it'll be... You know, we'll see what the program looks like on Monday.
James, what else caught you? Where else did you score last weekend?
Well, I mean, I like General Jim in the Pat Day Mile, and that was really my only real good hit on the day Saturday. But, you know, and obviously I think that horse has a lot of upside for Shug McGahey. There were some other performances, though. I mean, I thought Smile Happy, I thought he ran huge in that Ali Sheba. And that's a colt that broke his maiden, it seems like, forever. I mean, won the Kentucky Jockey Club, it seems like, forever ago, Steve. And that was only his eighth career start, so I think it's pretty encouraging for him. That race got a big number. He beat two real nice horses in West Willpower and Art Collector, and I was impressed with his performance. And, you know, I up to the mark. I mean, what an exciting turf talent for Pletcher and Rapoli. And even Bango, you know, just looking at the upcoming, like, spring meet at Churchill Downs, that horse loves Churchill, but he has never looked better in my mind than he did Luke winning that overnight stakes on Thursday.
How about the weekend, James? Let's get a couple of spots.
All right, yeah, I'll take a look at Belmont a little bit. Before you get into the three stakes races, in race number four, you have this starter allowance in there. And in this race, Steve, I like number four, Magical Ways. I thought that was really interesting. You know, here's a colt that you know, they paid a lot of money for, and they ran in four maiden races, and he ran okay, and they dropped him in for a tag last time. He led wire to wire, and David Jacobson, like, claimed him. And in the 22-day interim, he's worked him three times. That horse showed good speed last time. I think he's been trained for speed. And I think, you know, he's going to run a big race on the front end at 8-1 on the morning line. I'm intrigued by this number four, Magical Ways, in race four tomorrow at Belmont.
And that's an important opinion, James, because there is that middle pick five that starts in race four, goes fourth through the eighth. That's a nice number, 8-1, if we can get that one around.
You know, in the Man of War, I mean, obviously Warren Point is formidable. You know, he's not the... you know, he's not the most proven horse or, you know, he's not a top-class performer yet, but he's won 5 of 8 starts, and he's going to, you know, show up for Appleby. But I thought number five, House Street, got overbet last time. I sort of liked him at 8-1 on the morning line, and it was up there as the favorite. And I just thought he was probably like a little bit, I thought he was a little bit rank. I don't know. He was pushing himself up into the pace, and that's not the way Pratt wanted to ride him that day. And I look for him to come back and improve off that experience and show a lot more. I think it's encouraging that Pratt stays with the horse. Abreu's taking blinkers off. And if anybody beats that Warren's Point, I think number five, House Street, has a chance to run well.
Yesterday with Jeff Franklin, when we did the Win with Thoroughgraph segment, and it seemed to me that House Street was the least exposed of candidates, you know, at a price, you know, beside Warren Point and Red Knight. So,
yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's a great point. That's sort of my thinking too. He'll just show more off that first stakes effort. I like Bishop's Bay and the Peter Pan. You know, Brad Cox has got a whole he's got a whole nother crew. He ran four horses in the Derby. He's got Bishop's Bay. He's got First Mission. He's got this horse, Demolition Duke. I think he could come back and run well in like a stake race this summer. He's got a whole bunch of more three-year-olds coming along, and, you know, Corona Bold pointing for all the major sprint stakes. And, you know, I think Bishop's Bay is a horse to beat in there. I thought in the Run Happy, Steve, number four, Candyman Rocket, point blank, cannot handle any adversity whatsoever. So if it doesn't go well for him early in a race, he's in big trouble. But I do think that he needs to establish early positioning, which he couldn't do last time at Oakmont Park when he got out of the gate a little bit slowly in the count fleet. And I think he has a chance to bounce back and run much better in this grade three Run Happy tomorrow. He's won 5 of 10 starts. So when he gets the trip, he is tough. And this isn't the toughest field, I didn't think. And I just think that if he's established up close positioning, he's got a shot to run well in that Run Happy.
I should mention, you know, you sort of referenced, going back to the Peter Pan for a second, you referenced Brad Cox having a whole second division of these three-year-olds that'll in another wave of them. One of the three-year-olds, I don't know if anybody's discussed it, but Instant Coffee, when I talked to Al Gold yesterday about Slip Mahoney, where he was running, and he's running at Monmouth, Instant Coffee is not participating. They had thought about even running in the with Instant Coffee in the Sir Barton, but they're going to instead look at something different at Monmouth with him as well. So for those that are keeping tabs on.
Yeah, I looked at him yesterday, Steve, and he worked April 23rd, and I don't think he had worked since then. So I was a little bit wondering what was going on with him.
Yeah, they were. I think they were thinking to Sir Barton, but Arabian Lions presence in there. They thought, you know what, we'll stay home and do something else.
Yeah. And then I'll get out with a last-second pick if you want it today.
Of course we want it. We want it.
All right. Let me find it. Where is it?
What track?
It's at Belmont Park. It's at Belmont Park today. It's race number, race number 7, Steve. Number 1, don't mess with Tess. Let me tell you, it's got 5 seconds or thirds in his last 6 starts. He's even money on the morning line. I know he's got the best figures. I went back and watched that $20,000 claiming race he won in his last 6 starts, and he was life and death. The horse was going to win the race, veered out suddenly in deep stretch and wound up being third. He just sort of backed into that win, I thought, Steve. I like number 4, Floydian. This is a horse who's a – this is a filly that's a full sister to a turf winner. She's got another sibling that ran second in a turf stake and then got hurt, never raced again. Looked like he was going to be a good turf horse. And just turned things around last time for Falcone, winning the last 2 races, winning those claiming races. I know she's stepping up. She's stepping up in good form. I like her racing up close to the pace with Madison Oliver. I'm going to give her the edge at 10-1 in race number 7, number 4 today, Freudian.
Last second Friday push, the LSFP from James _ Scully, 111. James, thank you. Is anybody coming to Baltimore from your crew?
No, I don't think so, Steve.
All right. So we'll just talk to you, and we'll get plays from you and Shap the old-fashioned way next week.
All right. Sounds good. Have a good time, Steve. Best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, James. Great spending time while we were in the Ville. Thanks for everything.
All righty. Thank you.
James Scully, folks. Hammer's going to join us next, and maybe Mark Glatt was embarrassed about all the nice things I said about him, because Hammer had Mark lined up actually to join us. He told me, and I found out about that, you know, well after I was lauding but unfortunately he got either called away or had a horse working or who knows. So we'll have to, all right. This is interesting, having some issues getting out to Hammer. Interesting. Hammer, if you're listening, that's weird. I got a very strange message. So you got to call. Looks like you got to call me, if you would. Okay? Because Verizon is claiming that you are temporarily unavailable. So I don't know if that is maybe the do not disturb. I've been using that feature for the first time myself. The focus feature. I'd never done that before, and that includes, so like at night even, when you want to sleep and you don't want the phone beeping. But the one problem is, during the show, I have it on, and I forget, at noon, or in this case, at 11. and I forget to turn it off. And so then that opens me up to criticism from Tina. Because she says, I just called you, or I called you. Where were you? You never pick up when I call. because I got the do not disturb on. So, there we go. So this did work. Very strange. I don't know why that happened the way it did, but happy to get Hammer in here. Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good.
Nashville.
Yeah, and this is a town you certainly in the last year a couple of times, right?
Oh gosh, yes. It's heavily associated with Kentucky Downs just because that's where you land, and it's a half hour run. We went down for a little barbecue last year, and
yep.
I'm sure we'll do that again this year. But great town, especially once it got over the COVID. 2021 were a little different down there, but a lot of things to go see. I mentioned to you to go to the Country Music Hall of Fame, which, you know, I wasn't a big country music guy when I went, and boy, I tell you what, that is a super, super museum to go to if you get a shot. Johnny
right.
Cash Museum, all kinds of stuff down there.
I've got a couple of ideas for later this afternoon, and the priority right now is a haircut. I got to tell you.
All right, we need to get Brianna set up here soon.
does Tina cut your hair or what?
No. She'll be here tonight, but they've got somebody lined up for me. Apparently, somebody that is like the leading men's stylist in the Chase community.
In the Chase community.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, that could mean anything, I guess. Right? Bill Gallo's got you covered.
No, well, good. It's not Gallo. Gallo doesn't have a stitch of hair. This is a different. I got somebody else. The rest of them all. Last night I brought it up at dinner, and everybody said, "Oh, you got to go to I'm going to forget his name now."
Is it somebody with the one word name, like
yes.
Michael or something like that?
It is. It is a one word name, exactly. They all chimed in. They said, "Oh, we all go to." Was it Daryl or
Pierre?
No. I'm drawing a blank. So anyway, that's my priority. But I will do something touristy because that I'm famous that way. I'm not happy about missing a chance to see Tom Jones, who's going to be at the Ryman on Tuesday.
Well, that would be classic. That would be classic. You know what? I don't know if they let you go in there when they're not no one's performing. But if you can just, you know, pop in the doors and just kind of check it out, it's, you know, obviously it's an old church. It would just kind of blow your mind what the place looks like. I didn't know what I expected, but it wasn't what I expected, and it was just so cool to be able to. I mean, I don't care if you and I were singing there, it'd be worth going to see. It's just such a great music venue that is a must. Maybe you can get a flat tire or something and stick over for a couple of days.
No, I got to be in Baltimore.
Baltimore awaits. Speaking of Baltimore, I just saw Hairspray last week. It was great.
Oh, how
good
fun.
Good morning, Baltimore.
How fun. That's funny. I love it. I love it.
It sounds like you're in a phone, you know, in the middle of a party, actually.
What's the racing office? I'm in the racing office, and everybody's coming in to pick up their ticket packages and all that. So that's the ambient sounds.
Yeah.
Hammer, what was your Derby weekend experience?
Well, you know what? I ended up pretty good. Put it this way. Anytime you like three horses with the number 14 and you bet them all and they all win, you know, that's something to begin with. But no, of course, we like that Oaks filly. We talked about her on the air on Friday. So that gave me bullets for the next day. And there was an early 14 horse in the day that paid $9, and then the Cassie horse that was that you know That's probably the third Cassidy horse out of his 5,000 wins that I've actually bet on and won. So that was a fun day, a fun race for that. And the horse paid $47. And, you know, I went back to the old ways and actually bet the horse to win in place, just like the other ones. So I went in. That was after the ninth race. I was fit for bear, and I stepped up to the plate like Casey. But like Casey, I struck out the rest of the day. But for the weekend, I had a very good time and cashed a lot of tickets. Went into the Derby with, you know, three of my top four picks scratched. So I didn't know what to do. I ended up boxing, I think, seven horses in the trifecta, and I didn't hit it. And it was, it went down swinging. But all in all, I walked away. You know, of course, the minute I walk in the door, Gina's like, did you win? And I said, yeah, I did. You know, so I didn't have to pull the old I broke even trick.
I love it. All right. Well, so, you got more opportunities, and of course, we'll have you at Belmont Week. Rick, fairly quiet weekend at Santa Anita. Catch us up.
Very, very much so. Just the one stake out here, the San Luis Rey, which runs tomorrow at the last race in the card, and some notables in there that make this run, the mile and a half on the turf. Dicing Ochara comes back off the Golden Gate Mile try for Leonard Powell. Be tough in there. An interesting entrance from John Sheriff's Midcourt. Makes a comeback here. And kind of interesting. I was asking around, is this a prep for the, possibly a prep for the Gold Cup, which comes up in 3 weeks or so. He's never been on the turf, and maybe it just came along that he needs a race, and this one was here, and, you know, let's see what happens. But if he had another race under his belt, I'd say, you know what, he could be the speed of the race and make something happen here. But I think he's just in here to really get legged up for the next one. It's definitely Leonard Powell's race to win, without a doubt, Dyson Mochara. But I did take a peek over to the Peter Pan, and you see who's running in the Peter Pan. Henry Q, baby, right?
I it's funny you say that, because I just minutes ago I reached out to Doug O'Neill to see if there was still some consideration for the Preakness, and the answer is no. They are running Henry Q tomorrow in the Peter Pan. Yeah.
Well, if they run well in the Peter Pan, they're going to move on to the Belmont, I believe.
Yeah, so that's logical. You know,
and so, hey, you know, the horse ran that bang up race when we got to watch with him down there at the Minehead Bird Derby. Ran out of the TV, and ran in the Sunland Derby last time. But, you know, obviously you got to look at Brad Cox. You guys were talking about, he's got a deep bench, as you know, with Bishop's Bay. Classic catch from Todd's Barn. I mean, I got to give that horse a second chance in the graded stake category. He obviously doesn't belong that far back as he was in the wood. And it's a little closer than normal. I think maybe his experience could push him across. The price might be a little bit better. I see how Irod gets back on there. So that could be a decent race. And are they taking entries? No, they're not taking entries for next week. But, a couple things I wanted to mention. You know, I heard you and Scully talking about that. You know, now we're raising our – every other year it comes up about changing the Triple Crown, and, you know, maybe we need to do this, maybe we need to do that. But the discussion is obviously worth it at some point, don't you think?
Well, there's some other factors that are starting to weigh even more heavily on all of this. And so, yeah, I mean, it's always provocative.
It's always something. Well, I mentioned it before, but what we'll do is, since I've had this change the triplecrown.com domain for about 15 years, we'll, if it starts heating up, you and I will get that site started. We'll have a spot to for people to go and leave their comments. How's that?
That'd be interesting, actually. All right, I love it. Yeah. By the way, you missed,
yeah, you know,
you, Hammer, before we, you missed one opportunity I brought up at the end of the first half in that San Luis Rey. You're not going to talk about Opry for Papa Padromo? I mean, here we are. The Nashville connection,
the grand old Opry. No, he's run well the last two times, and he's been close. And you know, he's 4-1 in the program. He could be fine. And you know, they don't go over jumps here, but he could be all right there. You know, and speaking of that jump thing, you had Clancy on. Was it yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, yesterday.
And was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday. So he was talking, and as he was talking, he brought up the hunt meets, and he brought up the hunt meet at Red Bank, which is in New Jersey near Monmouth Park. And when Gene and I moved back to New Jersey, we didn't know what a hunt meet was, and we ended up going to the Red Bank hunt. And I tell you what, it was fantastic, right there on, you know, somebody's estate close by, and I couldn't believe it, all the people there. It was incredible, and that it turned out, I think it was the last year that they had it that we went, and then we ended up going up the Far Hills a couple times. But I can't stress it enough, as you have, Steve. You know, if you're near one of these steeplechase events, you got to go. It'll blow your mind how many people are involved, and you know, it's just a big party. It's fantastic.
No, absolutely, absolutely. That's the appeal, say the least. Hammer, let me get. I gotta get Dennis Drazen. It's opening day tomorrow at Monmouth, so I'm gonna reach out for Dennis. But we'll talk ahead of Preakness next week.
Yep, sounds good. In fact, just made my plane flight to be there for the Haskell. I think it's July 22nd. So say hi to Dennis and Monmouth Park. It's the greatest, what is it? The shore's greatest stretch.
The shore's greatest stretch and Fast Times on the Jersey Shore.
All right. Enjoy.
Have a good weekend, Rick Hammerly, everybody. And let's swing around and get to Oceanport and talk to Dennis Drazen. And, of course, one of the things I'll always be proud of is the long series of conversations that we had with Dennis Drazen, leading to the victory to make sports betting possible in the United States. And so many things that Dennis and the Horsemen have continued to do to make Monmouth guarantee its future and help it grow. And that includes fixed odds. And the fixed odds news is all good, Dennis. And happy pre-opening day.
Thank you. Good morning. It's always a pleasure to have these opening day and other conversations with you. Thank you for the time.
Not at all. Dennis, we're going to certainly feature plenty of discussion on a regular basis, you know, talking about the fixed odds, because if anything, and even before we talk about the season at Monmouth, we've got to talk about how important this project is, frankly, to horse players and to the game, considering how much frustration is out there from players with the, you know, the volatile odds movement, mostly generated by the, you know, the computer-assisted wagering. And fixed odds is being looked to as, you know, potentially a solution and at least an outlet for horse players, and you guys are at the forefront.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think that we're hopeful that if we look at the Australian model, they have 30 million people. They bet about $23 billion per year. We have over 300 million people, and you know where we are. We're, you know, 11 to 12 billion. I think this is a huge opportunity to grow the overall handle, and adding this to sports books and ADWs, which we're looking to do probably next year, is going to be huge for horse racing. And I think one of the biggest complaints I get walking around Monmouth and people who want to voice their opinion, yeah, I bet this horse at 2-1, you know, by the time they broke out of the gate and went half a furlong, you know, the odds were 2-5. Yeah. You know, are you guys letting people make bets afterwards, and they don't understand the computer programs and the time it takes to, you know, get into the pool and the odds change. So those people that are using the fixed odds now are thrilled. They get the odds that they bet at. It doesn't get changed. I think it's an opportunity for all of us in racing to take advantage of a product that's been used overseas and grow our overall handle. But, you know, I think that everybody's got to buy into it. I think they were looking at Monmouth as a model last year to take a look at, but, you know, it's going to be bigger this year. We finally got approval Wednesday on the Monmouth Bets app. So there will be an app to do fixed odds wagering. And we're excited about the opportunities for growth in the industry. And, you know, we think BetMakers is doing a great job bringing this along. And, you know, as different tracks give them permission, I know every jurisdiction has its own issues. And some need legislation, some need more than that, some need their regulators on board. But we're hopeful that in addition to the current venue, I know New York, for example, has been excited about the future opportunity for fixed odds. And there's a bill in, and they were focused, obviously, on their big renovations at Belmont first. But I'm hopeful that by the end of the year, you know, we can add the New York signals, and I think that would be huge. And then the other big jurisdictions have to sign on, and eventually, you know, this is going to be great for horse racing.
The, you know, this legislation on Wednesday and the approvals, actually, the other, I mentioned this earlier this morning, Tampa Bay Downs, Canterbury, Delaware Park, Hawthorne, Emerald, and Century Mile. And then, of course, when the action moves over to Meadowlands, the Monmouth at Meadowlands turf season in September, those have all been added. And, you know, the obviously, Dennis, we've talked, you know, we talked about, you know, the in-race wagering and the kinds of things that, you know, you guys tried. You know, you've been so willing to experiment. The critical mass has been the, you know, has been the key. And, you know, it feels like there's real momentum this time on this project. And there's other, you know, there's other teams that are looking to help expand this, you know, around the country, and a lot of this is, as I call it, pushing the peanut. You know, there's a lot of underpinnings in state houses and state government, and, you know, your relationship in Trenton has obviously gotten so much accomplished. So, you know, this will be a real watershed season at Monmouth.
Yeah, I think in addition to the tracks you mentioned, that BetMakers on opening day said there are six tracks at the United States that they'll be taking some wagers on also.
Nice. Now, it's all heading in the right direction. And, you know, you've tried to tell people to be patient and, you know, that to work with whatever the constraints might be, and the constraints have been considerable in New Jersey. There's, you know, there's the geo, you know, the geo tracking elements of this, and it's, you know, Jersey centric, but at some point it's all gonna, you know, it'll all knit together. And you bring up Australia, New Zealand. You know, after resistance there, it's now eclipsed, you know, the fixed odds has eclipsed the parimutuel markets. And you know, they've got the apps, you know, the Tab Corp has got the app where, you know, people can bet parimutuel or they can bet fixed odds. So the more options we give players, the better off they are and we are as an industry.
Listen, patience pays off. Witness 8 years for sports betting, but we won.
You did win.
I think everyone, you're probably looking, in my opinion, at a 5-year period before everybody buys in and it becomes like normal wagering activity for everybody. It will be slow growth, but I'm hoping a lot of tracks get on within the next year. But I think 5 years down the road, you'll be looking at everybody using their smartphones, iPads, iPhones, you know, and you'll be able to bet 24/7. on anything you want. It could be horse racing, sports, or anything else that they let us wager on. And I think it's going to be good for the industry. I think there's huge growth out there for horse racing if we take advantage of it.
Well, let's talk as well about the season and the highlights. There's no greater highlight, of course, than the Haskell. Talk a little bit, Dennis, about the expectations for the season and the horsemen and everything that people can look forward to when they come to Oceanport.
Well, I mean, the season we're excited about, you know, this year, you know, putting aside the, you know, different ways of navigating through COVID and the things we could do and couldn't do. I think we're beyond that. I mean, COVID may not be over completely, but it's not affecting us. Availability for 1,600 horses on the backside, and we're full. We're over full. You know, there's a waiting list. And so I think they're going to be, you know, a full contingent of horses at Monmouth. We'll have good quality racing, good purses that probably average about 400 a day throughout the meet. You know, we will, you know, hopefully be able to, you know, prevail over any weather issues, hopefully no opening day rain. But putting all that aside, we're excited about the meet. We think the horsemen are going to support the meet. We're kind of getting used to, you know, high Wu and highs are coming in. So, you know, we had meetings yesterday, and you know, I think it's heading in a good direction. And I think, you know, whether some object or don't object, and I know there's a big concern from everybody about the issue and trying to navigate that in the next 3-year study that they're going to do on LASIK. I mean, it's been used on 2-year-olds since bay courses now. I think 5 years from now or 3 years from now, they're going to ban it completely, but they're doing this 3-year study. So, you know, people have their concerns about horse health and welfare and whether it's good for the horse or not. But what I'm trying to say is I think the debates are over. I think everybody understands where we are. Everybody is going to have to work within the Heisen Iowa system, and we're cooperating with them. We're ready to get our meet started first under New Jersey law and beginning on the 22nd, or Heisen Iowa. Although Heisen's been in effect since July of last year, but Iowa is the new addition, and they're going to be taken over. So, you know, we're all going to have to cooperate and live within those issues. And, you know, we're ready for it. And our horsemen were, you know, briefed by Dr. Malloy yesterday about what you can do and what you can't do. So I think everybody's pretty much, can't say everyone's supportive, but everyone understands the rules and will play by the rules. So we're going to go through the transition on that. I don't expect that to have an adverse effect at all on the meet. I think it's going to restore a little confidence in the public, who's kind of, you know, rocking and rolling these days. They, and I don't want to get into a conversation about it, but, you know,
understand.
A lot of people are talking about the Churchill breakdowns and, you know, leading up to the Derby. A lot of people are talking about Forte. I'm not getting into those issues, but we're hopeful that, you know, speaking about the Haskell, we can lure all these horses to the Haskell. We're hoping maybe Forte will look at our race. We're hoping all the other outstanding horses, including the Derby winner, look to our race. You know, our race is always like the pinnacle of the next season, so they get over the, you know, Triple Crown, and they, you know, get their rest, and then they come back for the Haskell and go off after the Haskell for the Travers and prep them for the Breeders' Cup. So we're hopeful to get a lot of those horses, you know, that come to us. And I don't know if you had Jake on yet, but
next week
we reestablished the Betmakers Bonanza, so there's going to be a $1 million bonus. No, for any horse that wins the Haskell, Travers, and Breeders' Cup Classic.
Nice.
And we're excited to add that, you know, to what we're offering to lure people to the Haskell. But the Haskell's an event. You know, people always come. People always show up. I can't say that we'll get 61,000 like at the American Barrel Haskell. Hmm. But Haskell is pretty much consistent, 35,000 to 40,000 people, and it's a great day. And we anticipate, you know, having another good Haskell and a great meet.
Haskell.
And the horsemen are excited to be here. And, you know, I'm excited that we have opening day coming up, and it's time to get out to Monmouth and, you know, enjoy everything we have to offer there. And we're moving forward on the new Caesars sports book. So, you know, you come to Monmouth, you can do sports betting also and enjoy our venues. The new building probably won't be ready for another year and a half, but, you know, by the same token, we have, you know, more than enough space to come and do sports betting and enjoy Monmouth. And there seems to be a crossover between sports betting and horse racing. And I think that, you know, as sports players get used to horse racing or get added to all the apps, you know, it's going to have to increase the handle that's out there on its big wagers. So a lot of people want to bet, you know, whenever there's some an opportunity to wager. So if they're looking at their app and they see now horse racing there in a way that they understand sports betting, they're going to bet on horse racing too. And they're going to do parlays of, you know, pick fours, re-horse races into a ball game.
Yep.
I think there's a world of opportunity for those of us that want to be innovative.
That has always been, you know, part of the dialogue and part of the interest in, you know, the various entities that are trying to get horse racing on, you know, integrated into the sports betting apps. You know, that conversation's happening in New York, for instance, in Albany, and, you know, you made it very apparent early on when, you know, when the walls came tumbling down for sports betting. Well, Dennis, I cannot wait, as always, to get down there. It's the way I talk about Monmouth for years and years, it was the first racetrack that I was able to attend like on a regular basis. It's just a magical place. It has, you know, has such an important role in summer racing on the East Coast. Haskell Day, July 22nd. In addition to the $1 million Haskell, the United Nations and the Monmouth Cup, the Molly Pitcher and the Matchmaker, plus the Wolf Hill. As long as we can keep the temperature under 97, we should be in good shape for July 22nd for Haskell Day.
I shouldn't laugh about it, but as long as you brought it up, Eisenhower were not in control of weather.
That's the one thing.
That's still our New Jersey Racing Commission.
Unbelievable.
So we're going to have to be within these guidelines. But look, safety versus a jockey's comfort. So.
Absolutely.
I get it.
Well, the monmouthpark.com, you've got everything you need to know, all the great facilities and the options. It's a family-friendly environment, and of course, you know, going to the shore and spending part of the day there and coming over for racing, and you got the miniature golf for the kids, you got the Blue Grotto, they're just fabulous place to spend any day, and it all gets started tomorrow. Dennis, I appreciate it, and pass along anything you need. And we're going to be featuring Friday selections at Fixed Odds with BetMakers. And I look forward to seeing everybody Haskell Week.
Yeah, we also have a new section that we did this year of some luxury suites, you know, down where the horseman boxes were and a bar there where people can come and rent them for the day for parties. So, you know, check our website and get the details of that, and, you know, it will be a good experience for you.
Outstanding. Well, May 13th to September 10th, and then over to the Meadowlands for a few weeks. Dennis Drazen, Monmouth Park. Thanks, Dennis.
Thank you.
Dennis Drazen, of course, who we talked to all through, he talked about 8 years. It's amazing to be, you know, to have that legacy, the person who literally brought sports betting, despite everybody saying it would never happen and couldn't happen, Dennis changed the landscape and is constantly trying to, you know, assure a great future for one of America's great racetracks. If you've never been, if you're planning a Saratoga trip, front or back end, pair it up with a trip to Monmouth and to Delaware as well. Delaware getting ready to open. We're getting ready to close. We've had two really fun days here at the Iroquois. The rain has stopped, and the skies are brightening, and we're looking forward to tomorrow's Iroquois Steeplechase, nationalsteeplechase.com, and looking forward to getting to Baltimore as well. Talk to you from Pimlico, obviously, on Monday. Thanks to Nick Tamaro and Scott Shapiro and James Scully, of course, Dave Grenning as well, Hammer and Dennis Drazen, Woodbury Payne and Bill Gallo, and Marianne, who popped on, making her breaks her maiden on At the Races. The Odyssey continues. One more week out and about. All right. Good luck this weekend. I'll have Belmont action on the website in the morning. I got to do something to keep me busy this afternoon until Tina gets in tonight. Thanks, everybody. It's been a fun week. Hi-ho. Talk to you on Pimlico Racecourse Monday morning.